Olive leaf extract is an extraordinary source of the beneficial polyphenols found in olive oil and in olive plants. And now you can get all the benefits from a supplement, olive leaf extract, available through drhoffman.com. Olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to discuss something of tremendous importance. Actually, we're devoting a couple of interviews this week to the subject of the microbiome. That means the bacteria that live inside you and on you, and they're an important contribution to disease, as we know, but also to our health and well-being. Today, we're going to talk to Dr. Martin Blaser. He's written a great book. It's spelled B-L-A-S-E-R. The book is entitled Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues. And just for emphasis, remember, this is not a book about how we should take more antibiotics from a prominent mainstream physician. This is a book about how antibiotics pose a peril to our survival as a species. Dr. Blaser has studied the role of bacteria in human disease for more than 30 years. He is the director of something I'm very glad that they set up at my the very self-same medical school and hospital that I served my medical residency at, NYU Hospital here in New York. I wish they'd had this when I was there. He's the director of the Human Microbiome Program. And he served as the chair of medicine at NYU and as the president of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. And he also has written in numerous publications and appeared throughout the media, including NPR, Today Show, The Usual Suspects. So without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Martin Blaser. Congratulations, Dr. Blaser. The book is excellent, and I recommend it to all my listeners.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so first of all, tell us what got you to write this book, because it's a clarion call to action on the antibiotic front, that perhaps we're using them and dispensing them too liberally.
Yeah, well, I have been thinking about this book for more than 10 years, and I've worked on it for the last 2 years. And it's not just about antibiotics. It's about, as you say, about our microbiome, the large totality of all the microbes that live in and on us that we've inherited from our mom, and she inherited from her mom, and so on and so forth, back to time immemorial. And my concern is that our ancient microbiome is changing, and that those changes, which are driven by many things, including the overuse of antibiotics, are what's fueling many of the modern diseases that are plaguing us and people all over the world.
Well, in your book, you review the many helpful roles that bacteria play. A lot of people think of bacteria as bad things. You know, we spray Lysol on our phones, we scrub down with disinfectant products, and we rinse our mouths with Listerine. Women use powerful vaginal douches. We put antibacterial underarm products on our under our arms, and use antibacterial soaps. So, what is it that the bacteria do that's positive?
Well, again, bacteria can cause very serious disease, and that's been some of the breakthroughs of the last two centuries, are understanding how bacteria make us ill. And the discovery of antibiotics beginning almost a century ago was one of the first great tools against some of the terrible organisms. Yet the bacteria that cause disease are only a small fraction of all the bacteria in the world. Most of the bacteria in the world are neutral to us, and some, as you point out, are good for us. And our body is filled with bacteria that are good for us. They do many good things for us. They train our immune system. They help us digest food. They make vitamins for us. They help protect us against invaders. So we don't want to diminish those good guys. We want to strengthen them, if anything.
Well, some amazing facts that you enumerate in the book. The number of bacteria that are in our intestinal tracts?
Yes, we carry more bacterial cells in our bodies than we have human cells, probably on the order of magnitude of about 10 to 1. So we're 90% bacteria, 10% human in terms of the number of cells in our body.
And what would happen to our stool composition if we completely eradicated all the bacteria in our intestine?
Well, the good news is we can't completely eradicate all the bacteria in our intestine because we can't sterilize people, which is basically good news. But it accounts, all those bacterial cells account for about half of our fecal matter every day.
So we're talking about literally pounds of bacteria that live within us.
It's estimated that if you took all the bacteria living in and on the human body, they'd weigh about 3 or 4 pounds, which is about the same weight as the human brain.
Wow. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff going on in the intestinal tract. What about, there is this concept of what's called bacterial crosstalk. Can you explain what that means?
Well, the bacteria that live in the human body are not accidental. The organisms we have are the same ones that our ancestors have and that people all over the world more or less have. And these are bacteria that know how to communicate with our cells. They are sending chemical or physical signals to our cells. They're receiving chemical and physical signals back. And it's kind of a dialogue, and this is what we've evolved with, and we think it's especially important during early life, when babies are developing. They're developing their metabolism, they're developing their immunities. This kind of cross signaling is what leads to the production of useful compounds and useful pathways for babies to grow.
And in fact, the normal route of entry into the world is through the vaginal canal, which is an area that is inherently laden with bacteria, except when we do C-sections, when we sort of change the natural order of things.
Well, we humans are mammals, and for the last 100 million years, mammals have been giving birth to their young by passage through the birth canal. This is true whether the mammals are bears or mice or elephants or dolphins or humans. It's always the same. And when the baby comes out of the womb, the baby starts getting covered with the mom's bacteria. The skin is covered, the baby swallows the bacteria, and that's how mammal babies start life.
And these are sort of a setup to normal, like in a way programming the immune system, sort of like the way you would buy a computer. It doesn't have a lot of programs, but you'd have to download a lot of programs or maybe insert some disks into the computer to create all the programs that you need.
Yes, so out of all the different bacteria that mom has, she passes along many bacteria, but some of them become dominant. And the ones that are dominant in people here are the same ones that become dominant in Europe, in Africa, in China, everywhere. So it's not accidental. It's all been choreographed. And these bacteria help our human cells develop in a normal, healthy way. As you point out, when a baby is born by C-section, they're missing that initial step.
So they're going to inherit not the bacteria that may be present in the vaginal canal, but maybe certain skin bacteria. That may change the way they start in life.
They certainly start differently. They start life with different bacteria. Often it looks like skin rather than vaginal bacteria. Sometimes it doesn't even look like the mom's skin. It could be the skin of people in the operating room.
Right. The hospital, you know, whatever's floating around in the hospital might be inoculated into their gastrointestinal tracts.
Yes.
So what are some of the consequences? This has been studied, you talk about in the book, of our kids getting so many antibiotics earlier. What are some of the medical conditions that we're seeing on the increase?
Well, let me just, before we get to that, let me just give you a sense of the scale.
Sure.
Because the estimates of antibiotic use in U.S. children is enormous. The estimate is that by the age of 3, the average U.S. child, that's across all of the children in the United States, gets about 4 courses of antibiotics. And by the time they're 10, they have about 10 courses, And by the time they're 20, they've had 17 courses.
Wow.
These numbers may seem big, but they're consistent with many other recent studies. Now, just so you understand that this is not necessary, in Sweden, they've done a similar kind of survey. And there, at every age, the Swedes are using only 40% of the antibiotics that we use. So our child at 3 years old has four courses of antibiotics. Their child has 1.4. And at age 10, our child has 10, and their child has only had four courses of antibiotics. So that immediately tells us that about 60% of the antibiotics used are not needed at all.
And what are some of the other ways that we suppress the natural flora or the natural bacteria? Because we're using a lot of products, disinfectants, triclosan, and various types of sanitizers, and also antibiotics come to us via our foods.
Yeah, so all of the above. You know, again, it starts at birth. These days, a third of all the babies born in the United States are born by C-section, and that's gone up dramatically over the last 30 years. In Scandinavia, in most of those countries, the numbers of C-sections are in the low teens, so we're more than double that rate. We're using all kinds of antibacterial soaps and lotions with the intent to protect us against bad bacteria, but they're also causing damage to our good bacteria. And the real question is, net-net, are they doing more good or doing more harm?
I read a study that just came out today, perhaps it came out a while ago, you might have seen it, which suggests that the use of triclosan can increase the risk of staph infections of the nasal passages. How can that be? It's something that kills bacteria.
Well, because, as I mentioned before, one of the big roles of our good bacteria is they protect us against the bad bacteria. And by using all these antibacterial solutions, we're damaging the good bacteria. So it's not surprising that it makes us more sensitive to pathogens like certain dangerous strains of Staphylococcus.
So in some ways, we can analogize this to if we apply a defoliant to a landscape like we did in the Vietnam War in an effort to reveal the hiding places of the enemy, what grows back first is weeds, or after a forest fire, after devastation, we get a disordered flora that's coming back. Sometimes the hardiest, most aggressive species take over when the other gentler species have been eradicated.
Yeah, you expressed it very well.
So talk a little bit about, before we get again to the diseases and health problems that arise from disrupting our internal milieu, talk to us a little bit about the prevalence of antibiotics in our food supply, even in our water supply.
Sure. I'm very glad you mentioned that. And this is one of the central themes of Missing Microbes. About 70 years ago, shortly after the discovery of antibiotics, farmers found that if they fed antibiotics to their livestock, their animals would gain weight. So this is what's called growth promotion, and it works. In fact, that's why they use so much antibiotics on the farm. It's been estimated that 70 to 80% of all the antibiotics used in the United States are used on the farm to fatten up farm animals.
So what you're saying is that they don't necessarily use antibiotics selectively when the animals get sick or even to prevent illness. They use the antibiotics merely because they act as a sort of a supersized me kind of their growth promoter.
Right. They promote the growth. They help the animals use their food more efficiently. And they're not treating individual animals. All the animals on the farm or on the feedlot are getting the antibiotics every day in their food or drinking water, and this gets them to market sooner. And so this is part of the profit margin in agriculture. Now, one of the consequences of that is even though the rules, the regulations state that the antibiotics should be stopped well before slaughter, oftentimes they're not stopped. So that surveys have been done in supermarkets showing that many of the meats are contaminated with trace amounts of antibiotics, also milk. And in some communities, their water supply intake is just downstream of the effluent from one of these industrial farms. Hmm. So as a result, millions or tens of millions of people every day are ingesting food or water that has trace levels of antibiotics in it. Now, one of the questions is, what is the consequence of this? And we don't know. It may be immaterial that the doses are so low, or it may be having cumulative effects. We just don't know. But we need to know, because there's a lot of exposure that's going on.
Well, you know, obviously you have led us to the very, very scary possibility that the epidemic of obesity in America could be traced, at least in part, to our over-reliance on antibiotics. If we use antibiotics to fatten up farm animals, what about our kids who've received, as you said, nearly 20 doses of antibiotics by the time they're adults?
Yeah, in fact, about 10 years ago, that very light bulb went off in my head. I thought that if farmers are using antibiotics to fatten up their farm animals, what are we doing to our kids? And that's why we began to do experiments in mice, so that under laboratory conditions, we could test the hypothesis that this really made a difference. And we have found that it does. We're in experiments where antibiotics are the only variable. We find that the mice put on higher fat, and that their metabolism is markedly changed.
And since you study the the microbiome, actually our next interview we're going to do with the folks who are responsible for eubiome, which is a microbiome mapping project that you're familiar with. Since we now have ways of better testing, is there such a thing as a profile that's normal, that's a healthy profile, and can we detect a profile, say, of someone who might have a propensity to obesity or an imbalance that might predispose them to disease?
Well, let me just say two things. First, I want to go back to a point that you made earlier, which is that the idea that the antibiotics are contributing to obesity, you considered scary. But the fact that obesity has increased so much in the last 20 or 30 years, that's the scary fact. The question is, where is it coming from? And if it's due to antibiotics, or antibiotics are fueling this, then at least it gives us something that's potentially correctable, where we can change in the future how many courses of antibiotics we're giving our kids. Because, again, from the Swedish model, we know that not all those courses are necessary.
So that's a bad news, good news scenario. It's not inevitable, something that we can change. And it doesn't depend really on willpower or, pounding the pavement with exercise.
Yeah, so this is, again, there are many different theories about where obesity is coming from. But just going from the successful lesson on the farm, early life antibiotics, and the farmers found the earlier they gave the farm animals their antibiotics, the stronger the effect. So that is playing a role. As for the role of willpower, that's we haven't studied that.
Okay. Well, there's actually now some experimentation going on with what's called fecal transplantation. I'm sure you're well aware of that, and we've actually covered that story here on Intelligent Medicine, where the bacteria from a healthy donor go into someone who's sick with, say, C. difficile diarrhea, someone who's wasting away. And one of the criteria for a healthy donor is that the donor has to be non-obese, because the concern is that you could take someone who's wasting away with life-threatening diarrhea, normalize their intestinal flora, cure their diarrhea, but then ultimately give them the flora of an obese person and make them fat. Do you think there may be something to that theory, that there are different types of flora that are non-obesogenic and some that are obesogenic?
Well, first I want to give some context, and that is that the fecal transplant has been used in people who are very seriously ill with diarrheal illness. It's not
Indeed.
Casual diarrhea. These
Exactly.
are people who have C. diff infection and who've had multiple recurrences that have been refractory to conventional therapy. And when people have that kind of recurrent diarrhea, it's a very severe disease. Sometimes people die from that. So the conventional therapy has been certain antibiotics. But a couple of years ago, a trial was done in the Netherlands comparing fecal transplant with the conventional therapy. And the fecal transplant was doing so much better that they had to actually stop the trial and give everybody the fecal therapy. So this is an uncommon condition, recurrent C. diff infection, but it provides a principle, it proves the principle, that if you have a person who has a damaged ecosystem, that the microbes in their gut are way off, if you give them normal microbes, you can restore health. And that's a very important principle. Over time, we're going to learn what are the key bacteria in that mixture, and we may not have to give feces in the future. But at least for now, that's the treatment of choice.
Right. The research is, I'm sure, heavily underway to identify which species of bacteria are the species of bacteria that restore health or combat disease, say in colitis, Crohn's disease, in patients who have allergies, or even patients with obesity, because that would be the new killer app for probiotics to conquer disease. But so far, probiotics are a little hit or miss, aren't they?
Well, you know, what we can say is that if you go to a health food store or drug store or grocery store, the shelves are full of compounds called probiotics. And what I can say is that there are a lot of them. There are many of them that are quite different. In general, they're safe, but they've been hardly tested. We don't actually know what they do or how well they work. It's most of it out there is marketing. I believe that there are going to be great probiotics in the future, but those are going to be based on science, in which experiments tell us exactly what these organisms are doing and who should get them for what purpose, and will be the ones that will be for sale will be ones that will be based on rigorous clinical trials.
Maybe we can envision a time when we can perform ultra-sensitive stool tests to find out if there's a missing part of the spectrum of healthy bacteria, find out what that is, and then replete selectively the bacteria that are necessary to normalize a person's condition.
You've given my speech.
Okay. This is a good inflection point, Dr. Blaser, for us to pause, because we're going to go to part two of our discussion of your book, Missing Microbes. So folks, stay with us and return. And when we come back, we're going to discuss some of the specific medical conditions and problems that may be engendered by overuse of antibiotics and depletion of the normal microbiome. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, our guest, Dr. Martin Blaser, and the book is Missing Microbes. This is Intelligent Medicine.